Ed and Rizan Ferrelli on 2FM
with Virgin Mobile. Go from scrolling through stories to creating your own. Freedom is calling. Virgin Mobile. Bring on amazing.
When it comes to drug policy in Ireland, one of the few things we all agree on is that whatever's happening now, it's not working very well. It's not working very well. So in studio with me now is Senator Lynn Ruan, who has been campaigning for honest discussion and reform of drug laws for a long time now. Lynn, how are you?
Good. Good morning. Thanks
for coming
in.
Thanks for coming all the way into the studio. So what's your view of Ireland's drug policies now? How do you perceive them?
Well, if we look at it from a legislative perspective, we have legislation that would have been debated in the 60s and 70s and brought into law then. And when we look back at the dialogue in the chambers when it was actually implemented, there wasn't real understanding as to why we were actually creating drugs in terms of whether they're legal or not legal. So this is separate, I suppose, than service provision and policy on how we actually treat addiction. But if you just look at the raw laws of what we're working with, they're kind of a direct replication from the UK laws. But then if you trace it back even further, they actually originate way over in the States, actually. And it came in through what would have been seen as a very racist legislation and Harry Anslinger in the States. And he would have had an influence then at a UN level. And there was this real push towards prohibition. Mm. So it's kind of, our laws are kind of really rooted in Americanized.
Archaic.
They're very archaic. And actually the politicians at the time were saying some really good things in the 60s and 70s. And the Dáil set up a special committee to look at the bill when it was originally coming in the early 70s. And that special committee actually came out and said, we don't think we should be criminalising people for addiction. And then the chamber still went away. And that was, so that's how long people are going, don't think this is the right thing to do. And
you talk about the 70s, it's like, God, that's a long time ago.
I wasn't even born.
It's crazy, isn't it, when you think about it. So let's talk about the effect of laws like that on people in addiction.
So you've the big stuff, I suppose, that people get very concerned about, which is the likes of the drug trade and the illegal drug trade and the potential violence that goes with that and everything that goes with that. So that's when you begin to have conversations about legalisation. So if a market is, if you turn something into a black market, that's where the likes of drug dealing on a mass scale happens. So that's one conversation. It's not a conversation I've begun, it's a conversation I want to have, but where I've been going for the last, I say, 20 years, because I work directly with people in addiction, is actually the decriminalisation model, which has been in the likes of Portugal for over 20 years. There's a huge amount of evidence there on how it works. So to explain what decriminalisation is, you're decriminalising the individual. The substance is still illegal. So you can still arrest somebody for selling drugs. You can still arrest someone for the drugs trade. You can still have that justice approach to supply. But it's on the other end when people are actually caught with a small amount of drugs for personal consumption. And then you would have a couple of things happen at that point. That person might be just a recreational user. They may be just a young guy or woman at a festival, caught with a couple of E. The guard could take the couple of E off them and send them on their way. Then you have the other end of it where you have people who are struggling in relation to crack cocaine use, heroin use, benzodiazepine, which is really concentrated in areas of poverty. So what you're doing then is we're have these huge swathes of people that actually need a different types of interventions, health interventions, accommodation, social services, welfare, health equity, all these other things. And we can see that so many people self-medicate due to trauma and experience growing up. But then we decide that they're a criminal for that self-medication rather than actually going, well, justice is not really the place for this. I know if I or one of my children, say, had a heroin addiction or a crack cocaine addiction, I definitely don't want a judge deciding what happens to them for that addiction. You definitely want to have psychiatrists, psychologists, health interventions, community initiatives, that kind of thing.
Can I ask you, just going back to Portugal, so what do they implement over there? What's going on over in Portugal?
So they decriminalised over 20 years ago and they've seen a huge amount of difference. So decriminalisation, just to be clear and honest, is people kind of think, will something like that, will that stop drug use? that's not the intention. The intention is to keep people safer and give people opportunities to enter either drug-free lives or just not end up in prison or have an earlier health intervention. But what it's seen was a reduction in the amount of, say, 18 to 24-year-olds using drugs for the very first time. It's seen a reduction in the likes of bloodborne viruses. Yeah. What you do then in that is you also then have a saving in the justice system. So the money that's pumped into the justice system to arrest and police people for their drug use could actually be spent in a different area of justice. It just doesn't really make sense. Like if you look at legal aid, it's €90,000 to house a prisoner a year.
Wow.
Imagine investing that 90,000 in that family many years
in an
ago.
Area.
Yeah.
In an area. You know, I mean, that's a huge amount of money.
So I just released a podcast called Conversations on the Margins, and we went in and we recorded from inside We Feel Prison. And when you listen to the realities of some people's lives, the failing of the education system, being kind of forced out of education and being called thick when you had dyslexia, being put into institutional homes at the age of 11. And then you have to look at them men who are now in prison, for some for drug use, but some for like drug related crime. And you have to go, when did they go from being children that were failed to criminals and perpetrators? And we have to be able to try and find those links much earlier. And you're not going to be able to police your way out of drug addiction. That's about looking at so many different supports. And Portugal did that well as well at the time. Mm. So realising that they wasn't just about them changing the legislation, but they did need to invest very heavily then in the services that we provide.
Okay, so Lynn, what changes do you want to see? What needs to happen here?
I want to obviously decriminalise drugs possession. I want to have a real conversation then about prohibition as a whole. But there's other things that we need to look at. So there's naloxone, which is a life-saving drug if someone overdoses. In Ireland, somebody overdoses every day. We have way more overdoses in Ireland than we do, say, road traffic accidents.
Wow.
But yet we look at the telly and ads and the amount of money that goes into talking about road traffic accidents, which is important. But what I'm saying is, if we have someone, one person dying a day from overdose, and that's not the ones that are drug related, this is just specifically overdose, well then what kind of investments are we putting in to make sure people that there's real adequate overdose prevention? So in Ireland right now, if you're say a heroin addict, you have to be the one that goes and seeks a prescription to carry naloxone, which brings you around of an overdose. But I would like to see families being able to access that, because it's usually a child, a mother, that will find their loved one actually in an overdose. It's not the person themselves that's going to take themselves out of an overdose. In the prison systems, our prison system has a huge drugs problem, but they don't have access to naloxone. So there should be every landing having naloxone on it, the guards, the hostels, everywhere. So we should have an increase in that. I'd love to see a conversation around alternatives to methadone. So methadone works really well if it's implemented well.
Yeah.
And that it's not too overprescribed, and that the person actually has a real clear roadmap and plan. But there's other types of interventions like Suboxone.
Never heard of that.
Yeah, there's some countries trying heroin assisted treatment. So it's clinical grade heroin, and that's part of the treatment to actually move somebody out of addiction.
Okay.
And then our drugs task forces are very poorly funded. Our drugs task forces receive more now than they did pre-2008, yet the drugs crisis has done nothing but increase, and detox beds and support for women. Women are a very difficult group to work with in relation to addiction, because they're a lot more private and reserved about seeking help, because they're quite frightened of being judged as women and as mothers. They're afraid of, I suppose, state intervention in terms of their family makeup and stuff. So there's lots to do, and there's lots of conversations to have, and there's lots of interventions that we can do. And I do think that the public are ready for it. I don't know why politics is a little bit slower to have it, but somebody around the whole country, people know people that struggle with addiction. It might be different types of addiction, but for someone in my community, say someone from a community that has a much more affluent kind of community or estate or street, you might be able to point to one person in your community that, oh, we know that family had a really hard time, that person ended up on drugs. But in my community, I could probably do the opposite and try and point to the households that hadn't been impacted by drugs. And that's the inverse reality of that, you know. So we also need to address the issue of poverty. And if we can address the issue of poverty, maybe we create more equal environments where people feel less likely to use drugs just to feel normal. If you're using drugs to feel normal, it's really saying something about your current existence.
I mean, I know you're shouting from the rooftops about this, but what are people in power? What is their reaction to your ideas, and are they open to these conversations?
I think some of them are. I think some are probably a little bit afraid of the conversations. I think sometimes, I think with electoral politics as well, it's hard because people are probably worried about what their constituency are going to have to say about it, or if they understand it. And I think that's why I don't think Citizens Assembly should look after everything. I think the Shannon and the Dáil should do what it's supposed to do. But on an issue like this, I think the idea of a Citizens Assembly might be helpful, because it means you take it out of that adversarial political chamber and that kind of small little narrow space, and citizens in general discuss the topic. And I think that's when you get the nuance and the understanding and the learning. Everything is an educational process. So if we can create spaces where people can educationally engage in why advancing these drugs policy matter, I think people get that.
Okay, so someone's listening now and they're in their nice big house in D4 and they're like, this doesn't affect me.
Yeah.
These issues don't. What do you say to those people?
Well, I think if it doesn't affect you, I don't think that doesn't mean you don't have the capacity to see how it affects other people. You know, so I think if you have anyway got that level of luxury and privilege that you're not impacted by these things, I think it also means you have the luxury and privilege to be able to think about these issues in a really non-emotive way, but be able to see the class implication of poverty or the class implication of drugs, and also see the massive amount of expenditure. But if you live in a nice home and you're not impacted by addiction, you still come into Dublin City Centre.
I think it affects everyone in the country. Yeah. You know, it's a societal thing. I mean, we see it when we go into town. I mean, if you know, and people unfortunately who are addicted might turn to crime as well to fund their addiction. Yeah. I mean, it affects us.
It's a societal issue.
Yeah, it affects us
completely.
All. Why are you so passionate about this?
Well, I mean, I was a drug user at various different stages throughout my life. I mean, in my early life, my drug use was very much a response to deprivation and trauma. As I grew older, different recreational drug use was very different. And that's the difference. Some, you know, there's drug use and then there's drug abuse. And I think the statistics are about 1 in 3 people will use an illegal substance at some point in their lifetime. And that doesn't mean they'll ever have a problem with it. It doesn't mean they'll ever need an intervention. So for me, it's about going, well, there's people that clearly need a lot of support. The rest of the population at some stage will use drugs. You don't want some lad studying to be a doctor and getting caught with, you know, a little bit of weed in his pocket at the Trinity Ball and never being able to study. And then you don't want the people that are in working class communities just being policed and imprisoned for their drug use.
Mm.
So for me, having an experience of being a drug user, and then I worked in addiction for 20 odd years. I'm the chair of the Canal Community's Local Drugs and Alcohol Task Force on a voluntary basis now. And I also support a lot of projects in Talla. And my friends and many of my friends and many communities like mine are struggling daily with the realities of drug use.
Are we at
and
crisis
trauma.
Point, would you say?
Long ago. We were at crisis point long ago. But I think the thing is, it was ignored in a sense politically to a degree, and then austerity, and then everything got worse and funding got stripped. But what happened was then you also have services that provide, say, interventions in communities like ours who are a little bit afraid to speak up, because there is this kind of general fear that if I'm funded by the state and I stamp my feet and I shout too much about the failure of the state, will that affect my funding relationship with the state? So what has happened is the people who are there to advocate for us and fight for us have gone silent a little bit. But I think people are starting to move past that fear and into quite a position of rage, going, actually, we can't do this anymore. It reminds me of 1996 when the Pat Rabba report came in. Afterwards, vigilantism on the street. You can feel the energy is different right now. Too many people are dying and a lot more people are becoming more and more vocal. Last week, I wrote an open letter to the Taoiseach on the issue to try and show how broad that the issue was, but also how many different types of environments, like you said, it's all of society. So over,
did you get a response?
Yeah, not directly from him yet, but over 100 people signed that letter. Some work in child grief, some work in the youth sector, some work in HSE, clinical leads, some work in drugs projects, a principal of a school. You know, so I was trying to, with that letter, it was less even about the body of the letter. It was kind of going, this is not an isolated issue from me, from Lynn from Talla cares about drugs. Great. But who else does? And it's like, it's multifaceted, it's wide. And I think our society will be better and more trauma informed, and actually will have better outcomes for people. And I think everybody agrees on that. Everybody wants children to be able to reach their full potential, and everyone wants a life that's worth living. And I think if we can agree on those goals, we have to be able to look at the barriers and the things that are in the way of people leaving, living a decent, adequate life.
It's there's so much to be done just listening to you and on so many different levels. But what would look like a sign of progress in Irish drug policy to you?
Decriminalisation of possession, because then we stop seeing the people that we're trying to provide a service to as a criminal. If you end up in the prison system because you've been found with a small amount of drugs in your pocket for your own personal consumption, that's on your record forever. So even if you seek a sober life, even if you seek recovery, that will be held against you, and you will be punished forever for the addiction that you've had that's on your record. And I think if we can stop seeing people as criminals for their drug use, it means we can start engaging with people in a much more open and honest way. As a drugs worker, I'd never look at somebody that I'm providing a key work into an addiction and ever think this person's a criminal. And I don't think most people would. But yet that's what the law says they are.
Independent Senator Lynn Ruin, thank you so much for coming in and chatting to me about this subject. If you've any thoughts on the matter, you can get in touch with the show, 51552. You can also mail me jen@rte.ie. Thanks so much, Lynn.
Thank you.
Jennifer Zaffarelli.
Weekday morning from 9
on 2FM.